Monday, September 9th. London has gone through the worst air raid of the war. Fires and great property damages reported. The air raid lasted for 9.5 hours until early this morning. But in the later hours of the day, activity has fallen off. The government is taking stock of the damage caused and admits that considerable damage has been caused. There is no official statement on the number of casualties, but it was believed they were less than the 400 persons killed and 1,400 others injured Saturday. Meanwhile, in Berlin, newspapers said the British had bombed the great port of Hamburg. There was no mention of the amount of damage caused. Now the news reported direct from the British capital by Larry Lesser. Go ahead, London.
This is London, a London to which the howl of the all-clear came this morning like a benediction. It was the most cheering sound 8.25 million people had ever heard. Because for almost 10 hours last night, the heart of London shook with the thunder of high-explosive bombs. It was the longest and by far the most severe air raid that London has yet known. All night long, beginning at blackout time, that's the time when you're supposed to draw the blackout curtains, that swastika shuttle service was at work. 4 or 5 at a time, the German planes came over in relays from nearby France, dumping their high explosives from one end of London to the other. It was not until dawn this morning that the sky was clear of German planes, those slow, heavy, tight German bombers, which would be helpless in the light of day against fast British fighters. Virtually everyone was underground last night, as bombs of the heaviest caliber made the landmarks of old London tremble. 2 London hospitals were hit, as were 2 famous museums, one of them a private museum, which has fascinated many an American tourist. Many new fires were started, especially near the blackened ruins on the east end, where yesterday's fire scars still smoldered. Observers are sure that this second night of Hitler's air blitzkrieg was more intense than that of the previous night, in which more than 400 persons died. But it is hoped that casualties were not so high last night. 5 nurses are still missing this morning after the bombing of a famous hospital in central London. A bomb fell close to a famous newspaper building. The heaviest effect of the raid did not take place until after 3 o'clock this morning, when a number of the German planes began dive bombing, and the whistling of their bombs could be heard long before the rolling thunder of the explosions. Everything possible is being done this morning to get people to work, despite the bomb damage to transport services. Many people are still standing around famous London railway stations awaiting their trains, which have been held up by bomb damage along the line. The German planes used the great red glow of the fire in Dutchland as their starting point in what seemed an effort to set all London afire. To many, it seemed as though they were making their bombing runs up and down systematically, like men plowing a field. England's first refugees trudged the city streets before dawn this morning, a ragged, sleepless army of East End workers whose homes had been smashed. They pushed before them the inevitable cheap baby carriage, often loaded with belongings and 1 or 2 children. Many of them carried the best part of their homes on their backs, those little homes to which they paid a rent about $2 a week. They'd spent all night in crowded shelters. They'd come up at daylight, and many of them saw the roofs of their homes turn to the sky. The East End workers of London were meeting their Dunkirk. Trucks and buses are carrying the homeless away, and they're finding new homes at the town hall and police station. Some parts of London are being evacuated now. All the subways are running this morning, with the exception of one line, where there is no service on 3 of its spurs. But road transportation in East and Central London is now beginning to untangle itself through the blocked-off streets. We are told this morning that losses of foodstuffs in the bombed Dockland area are much less than might have been expected. A sugar warehouse and a flour mill were damaged. Quantities of bacon and cheese were affected, and smaller stocks of coffee and cocoa were involved. But Lord Wilton, Minister of Food, has said that the loss of these foods will not affect the rationing allowance. Last night, the Royal Air Force announced that it had made great attacks on the so-called invasion zone in France and Hamburg. Big armaments worked in Germany were also bombed. And this morning, my landlady, after being awake all night and reading that the people were doing the same thing in Germany, said to me, "I wonder why the Germans don't bomb Berlin themselves and the RAF bomb London. It would save a lot of petrol." This is Larry Lesser, returning you now to CBS in New York.
This is New York. Here's a dispatch from Budapest. Hungarian troops have completed their occupation of 1/4 of the territory ceded by Romania. The Hungarians took over Karaljago Pass in the Subcarpathians and the Metz Mountains in the foothills of the Carpathians. An official announcement said the occupation proceeded without incident. Another dispatch from Bucharest. A public trial of ex-King Carol on charges of mishandling public funds was considered likely in well-informed quarters today following dictator General Ion Antonescu's order sequestering all Carol's stocks and bonds. Switzerland. Carol, abdicated King of Romania, began his exile here today. But in 30 days, he must find refuge in another country. South America, the United States, and Canada have all been mentioned. Carol arrived at 5:39 p.m. yesterday on a special 10-coach train accompanied by Magda Lupescu, his Jewish mistress, Ernest Irinandu, his Lord Chamberlain, other members of the palace household, and four dogs. Carol smiled at the small knot of people who had gathered at the station, saluted smartly, and climbed into a waiting automobile, which took him to his hotel. He wore a soft brown hat and a light brown suit. And we've heard from London, and now in a moment we'll take you to the German capital for the latest report by William L. Shirer. Go ahead, Berlin. Columbia in New York, calling William L. Shirer in Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin. Columbia, New York, calling William L. Shirer in Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin. Ladies and gentlemen, due to transmission difficulties, as yet we've been unable to contact our Berlin correspondent. In the interim, we bring you the latest news from Berlin, received at Columbia's newsroom in New York. German airplane fleets returned to the attack on London today, a Nazi spokesman said, after a night in which they had rained thousands of bombs on the city without interruption in what Field Marshal Hermann Göring, Air Force Chief, proclaimed the historic hour in which, for the first time, the German Luftwaffe strikes at the heart of the enemy. The Deutsche Beobachter, Nazi Party official newspaper organ, headlined, "Terrible Blow Against England." It was asserted by the official news agency that in their newest bombings, German planes had damaged harbor works and factories and other military goals, striking especially at the East End industrial district. Though the German planes did great damage, Nazi spokesman said, their attack during the night did not equal in scale that of the night before, which was called the greatest air attack of the entire war. It was explained that the raid of Saturday night and Sunday morning was truly mass attack, involving formations of 100 and more planes each, but that raids of the Saturday night and this morning were made by isolated members or small formations. Nazi planes were aiming now at prolonging the period of air raid alarms and polishing off the damage done earlier, a spokesman said. It was asserted that German plane losses were negligible because British defenses had been seriously lamed by previous attacks. The balloon barrage, it was said, seemed to have missed fire completely as a means of defense. Göring, the Air Force chief, revealed at a headquarters in northern France last night that he had assumed personal command of the attack on Britain. I want to take this opportunity to say a few words at the historic moment when, after all the British provocatory attacks on Berlin, the Führer has decided to order reprisal blows on the British capital, he said during a radio newscast. I have personally assumed command of these victorious German flyers who for the first time are attacking London in broad daylight. Accompanied by brave fighter comrades, they will continue to carry orders to full execution. After a morning raid on London yesterday, a jubilant Nazi had said, after our Air Force yesterday and this morning demonstrated the ability to drop any number of bombs of all calibers on precisely chosen objectives without material interference by the British Air Force, it has become obvious that we have won mastery of the air over the capital of the British Empire. In last night's raids, it was said the German bombing planes found targets easy to find because of the fires still smoldering from previous raids. These fires, it was said, were enlarged. German planes flew low and attacked and destroyed numerous British anti-aircraft gun emplacements, spokesman said, as well as searchlight batteries. Woolwich Arsenal was attacked and appreciably damaged, it was asserted, and a powder magazine, railroad station, and some factories destroyed. Some German planes flew over London at great height to take photographs. Now Columbia takes you back across the ocean to the Italian capital for the report of Cecil Brown. Go ahead, Rome.
This is Rome. The Italian Air Force struck again during the day at the oil refineries at Haifa and Palestine. And by night, the fascist bombers raided the British naval base at Alexandria. These two air raids were announced by the Italian High Command an hour ago. The bulletin reports the British were surprised by the raid on Haifa, and the ground defenses had no time to go into action. We're told a refinery was hit squarely and vast fires broke out. At Alexandria, the High Command says, ships in the harbor and dockyard facilities were bombed. For the second time in 3 days, the Italians bombed the railway between Marsa Matru and Alexandria. All the Italian planes were reported safe. The High Command announces the bombing of Burma in the Anglo-Egyptian Sudan. The railway station and oil dumps were bombed at Port Sudan on the Red Sea. British bombers raided Mogadishu in Italian Somaliland, Massawa in Eritrea, and Berber in the former colony of British Somaliland. The communique says only minor damage was caused. We're told that one British plane, which tried to attack the Italian airfield at Mojo, was shot down in flames by a fascist fighter. 3 members of the crew were killed, but an observer was taken prisoner. Just as the Germans, the Italians are depending on their air force for their major military activity. The most striking example of this is the campaign against Malta. That island is only 80 miles from the Italian coast and has been raided from the air no fewer than 80 times. Wave after wave of fascist bombers have dropped tons and tons of explosive and incendiary bombs. And this is the only form of attack thus far used against Malta. Despite the number of British civilians who have been killed in the past 2 days, the Italian papers say today that the Nazis are attacking military objectives. The Popolo di Roma, for example, says that people have been killed because they live near these military objectives. The fascist press emphasizes that Marshal Goering is in direct charge of the greatest air operation in history. And the papers point out that this attack will be carried through to the end. But the Roman press gives no indication whether this air attack is the artillery barrage that precedes an actual attempted invasion. According to the Roman newspaper, Messaggero, ex-King Carl is going to Canada to make his future home. Today, he is at Lugano, Switzerland, and his permission to stay there expires within 15 days. This same report from Bern adds that before going to Canada, Carl will spend some time on the French Riviera, in the house he used during his former exile. Queen Mother Helena, whose son now sits on the Romanian throne, will leave her villa at Florence in a few days to return to Bucharest. It's reported here Carol's brother, Prince Nicholas, is now at Venice, but he will go back to Bucharest with King Michael's mother. This is Cecil Brown in Rome. I return you now to CBS in New York.
This is New York, and here is a dispatch from Tokyo. A Foreign Office spokesman said today that he hoped an announcement could be made within a few days concerning details of Japan's negotiations with French Indochina. I believe 2 main points already have been worked out, he said when asked about the negotiations at Hanoi, where the Japanese are seeking military and economic advantages. The newspaper Asahi today interpreted dispatches from Washington, D.C., concerning possibility of a total United States ban on scrap iron and gasoline exports as a possible first and immediate measure of trade pressure on Japan resulting from the United States military alliance with Britain in regards to Europe, the Pacific, and China. The newspaper said that the United States' recent less disguised concern over Indochina presages such action and the Japanese government is carefully watching the final United States attitude in this connection. And with this news from Tokyo, Columbia concludes another regular morning report of European developments, which comes to you each morning at this time and each evening at 6:45 Eastern Daylight Saving Time. This morning we heard the latest reports from London by Larry Lesser, from Berlin by William L. Shara, and from Rome by Cecil Brown. Larry Elliott speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.